So we're just collecting, you know, dividends through bonds and bond proxies and waiting for the second leg of this collapse to happen. And it absolutely, in my mind, has to happen. It has to happen.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, with us is our good friend, Michael Pinto. I want to point out, Michael, when we talked about a year, 2 year and a half ago, you predicted exactly what was going to happen. Fed raising rates, not turning back, and the aftermath. But now we've got a banking crisis on our hands, probably directly as a result of the Fed's rapid rate increases. And where is that going to lead?
Well, first of all, I have to know where you bought that shirt, because I definitely want one.
I could arrange one for you. It's an eBay special Robert Graham shirt.
So the problem with the banks is very clear to me. I knew there was going to be a problem about a year ago, but I guess I didn't put all the pieces together. I went to my local branch of my bank, and I said, I'm going to pull a substantial amount of money from you guys if you don't raise my deposit rate to meet that of treasuries. This was before T-bills were above 5%. But the fact of the matter is that the rate that banks make on their assets, you think about going back to 2010, most of their mortgages are 3%, 4%, 5%, Kerry. And it's a big part of, especially these regional banks' business, is making loans. Well, if they raise their deposit rate to match that what I can get in a treasury, they'd be out of business because they'd be paying me more on my deposits than they're collecting on their assets. So they can't do it. So I made the decision to walk, and I moved to a money market fund, which treasury only, and I'm making 5% of my money instead of 5 basis points. Now, that's the case if I move my money from a regional bank or to JP Morgan. I'm not going to accept 5 basis points of my money. And you just can't raise your deposits. You say, well, okay, why don't the regional banks or JP Morgan money center banks just raise the money they pay on deposits to match the T-bill rate? Well, they can't do that because then they'd be bankrupt. That's the truth. So it's a bank walk, bank run, whatever you want to say. That's what's really ailing these banks. So they lose deposits. They lose deposits on reserves. They're losing reserves through QT. So they're in a lot of trouble. It's just taking a little bit longer for this to pan out. Kerry, do you know that in 2 years, from 2020 to 2022, the M2 money supply went up 42% in two freaking years? Now, the average in 2019, the average increase in M2 was 4% per annum. Then it went up to 42%. So it's taken some time to get that liquidity out of the picture. And then now, guess what else happened, Kerry? We had a few banks, four and counting, go out of business. What did the Fed do? They printed, through the Bank Term Funding Program, $400 billion in 2 weeks. So when people say, well, Michael, you were right in 2022 about the market having a correction. That is correct. We saved our clients from the great preponderance of that disaster. 2023 so far has been a very choppy market. So if you look at AI stocks, they're doing fantastic. But if you look at the equal weight S&P 500, unchanged on the year. If you look at the Russell 2000, unchanged on the year. So we're just collecting, dividends through bonds and bond proxies and waiting for the second leg of this collapse to happen. And it absolutely, in my mind, has to happen. It has to happen because the Fed is trying to fight inflation, and fighting inflation the way they have already done so, on top of the amount of debt that we have outstanding, and on top of the record asset bubbles that we have created, not we, the Fed and the Treasury together, guarantees us that we are going to have another massive leg down in the economy and the stock market. It's virtually guaranteed, in my opinion. And in my research and the math and the data tells me absolutely. Now, it's been held in abeyance again because of the the draining of the Treasury general account, which has added hundreds of billions of cash to the economy. It's been held in abeyance by the $400 billion printed for the bank term funding program. But those things are going to end soon. And that's when you'll see the second leg.
And how bad is that leg going to be, Michael?
It should be an, I would think, 30 to 50% drop in the equity averages. And I say that that's what would happen if it was left unfettered. But who knows? Who knows, Kerry, what Jerome Powell will do? You know, remember, he's fighting inflation. At the same time, we had a couple of banks go under, and he immediately he bailed out the entire banking system with this BTFP program. He didn't even blink an eye. So, you know, what happens if I'm correct and later this year, you know, fall, winter of 2023, we have the second leg unwind, and I have a 20-point model that says that's absolutely still in the cards. That's absolutely going to happen. And then the Fed starts lowering interest rates significantly and re-enters QE, not this QE light. The BTFP is a QE light because it's just a loan. It's not a permanent monetization of debt. But what if he comes back and he says, you know what? The BTFP program is permanent. Here comes some QE and we're going back to zero. Well, here's the problem. He's going to be doing that when inflation is still at least two times his target of 2%. So what is he? So here's the conclusion I reach. We're either going to have a deflationary recession / depression, or we're going to have runaway inflation. I just don't see any way. Powell has to decide what he wants and at what time he wants it. But we're probably going to have both. First, we're going to have that depression, recession, and disinflation, deflation, and then we're going to have the intractable inflation.
So what's the world going to look like after this happens here?
Well, if anybody ever have any faith in the Treasury or the Federal Reserve to maintain low taxes, low interest rates, and low inflation, they're in for a rude awakening. If you thought that the current environment that we have is one of artificial construct, you're 100% correct. The Fed and the Treasury control everything. The massive manipulation in interest rates that we've seen since 2008 has been unprecedented globally. It's been a global nightmare when it comes to free markets. And you haven't seen anything yet, if I'm correct, because they're going to you're probably looking at something that looks more like Japan, where you just say, I'm capping the 10-year note at 2%, and I'm going to print unlimited amount of funds to keep it there. Well, watch out dollar, and watch out for inflation to rise to a level that's never before been imagined in the United States of America. I hope that's not the case, Kerry, because the real thing that we need and desperately desire here to happen is for a cathartic depression to normalize asset prices. In other words, the home price to income ratio right now is much higher than it was in 2005. The cost of the average mortgage and interest payment is higher today than it was at the start of the Great Recession and the Great Housing Bubble. Well, that's an untenable situation. I mean, home prices are unaffordable, especially at first-time home buyer level. So we need home prices to drop substantially. And I hate to say that because I own two houses. I bought them at the, I sold one at the top, but I bought two at the peak. And I knew I was doing that because not every decision is a financial decision. But they have to come down to a price that, or a level that can be supported by the free market. Stock prices, Kerry. I mean, AI, AI is the whole thing. AI is the big thing. But we were talking in the pre-interview. If you take out Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA, Google, or whatever the hell they're calling it now Alphabet, Facebook, or Meta. Meta didn't work, so now maybe he'll change his name from Facebook to Meta to AI. I don't know, Zuckerberg. But if you take those stocks out, the equal weight S&P 500 is flat on the year. The Russell 2000 is flat on the year. So it's only a very small handful of stocks that are bubblicious because of the latest thing Wall Street's attracted to, the shiny thing of AI. But AI has been around for decades. I mean, ask IBM and Watson. It's been around for decades. It's nothing new. So look at bond prices. Look at, you know, we had a situation where bond yields were negative. $17 trillion worth of bonds were negative throughout the world. You have three great, humongous, a triumvirate of bubbles that have never existed concurrently and to this degree in history. So yes, we're in big trouble. And if you don't have an investment philosophy that navigates between disinflation, deflation, and intractable inflation, you're gonna be hurt. I mean, if you're in a 60-40 portfolio, Kerry, and you own bonds in intractable inflation, I don't care what bonds you own, you're gonna get destroyed, just like you did in 22. And if you're short stocks at that time, you're gonna get destroyed. However, if you're long AI in a deflationary depression, you're gonna get even more wiped out. So it matters what you own and when. In other words, active management.
So the stock market, when inflation's raging, could go higher still, right?
In nominal terms, absolutely.
In nominal terms, absolutely.
In real terms, you look at what happened in any hyperinflationary economy. Shorting stocks is a really bad idea. Well, that's why I have five sectors in my investment spectrum. They range, you know, from deflation and depression to intractable inflation, which is when you have high inflation but no economic growth. So real growth plummets and real stock prices go nowhere but down. But in nominal terms, you know, shorting a stock in nominal terms, you're going to lose money. Don't tell the guy that the guy you borrowed the stock from. But yeah, well, wait a second. It's down in real terms. Doesn't matter. You lost.
Yeah, you're paying nominal dollars in your losses. So, but then when it flips to deflationary, which it inevitably will do, right? Then you clean up shorting.
That's why it's very important to have an accurate model that measures and maps the economy like I have. And listen, my gut feeling, Kerry, is to get massively short the market. I would love to be massively short the market right now. I think our short positions right now total a grand total, I believe, of about 3 or 4% net, not net short, just in total shorts in my portfolio. But we're long bond and we're long bond proxies in a big way. So think, you know, utilities, think about defense stocks, think about, you know, treasury bonds. So why am I not more short? Because the model tells me it's not time to do so yet. I mean, I want to see the high yield spreads blow out. I want to see net financial conditions tighten, not loosen. And until that happens, I'm going to stay with the data rather than my feelings. But when those things change, and my model predicts they will later this year, that's when I'll jump on this, on the opportunity. In the meantime, I'll just be happy collecting a significant amount of dividends in a safe manner.
All right, so play it safe for now. Yeah, I'm surprised that stocks overall, when you filter out the FANG, are actually flat. I think they're doing pretty good staying flat.
Well, it's because of, like I said, you had that 42% increase in money supply that's bubbling around out there. You had the Treasury General account, which is being drained to keep the interest payments and the checks coming from the government. That's new money. The TGA is new money. It acts like QE. And then you had that $400 billion increase in the Fed's balance sheet over 2 week period, which is, you know, starting to be eaten away now. So it's been delayed. In March, you know, you look like a hero. If you say, Michael, you know, you were correct up to 22. And then you said, oh, look, in March, things were starting to fall apart. The banking system was failing. And the stock market was faltering. Well, guess what? It would have been a really bad idea at that time to increase your shorts because of what the Treasury and Fed were doing. I think that ends because eventually you're going to raise the debt ceiling, right, Kerry? Eventually you're going to do it. I mean, these two powers in DC, the red and the blue, Republicans and Democrats, what do they care most about? Power.
Elected.
You're staying in power, right? That's what they're all about. So, I mean, eventually raise the debt ceiling. It's going to come with pretty trenchant spending cuts, though. Otherwise, it'll never get through the House. So if McCarthy wants to hold on to his speakership, he better put a bill to that back to the House. The one that they passed was good, right? That will never survive the Senate. It wasn't even put for a vote. But when they change it, when they agree, when McCarthy and Biden agree, it better have some pretty sharp spending cuts, deep and trenchant spending cuts. Otherwise, it'll never go through the House. If it gets through the House, it'll get through with Democratic votes, and yeah, McCarthy will be out.
That's the end of him.
That's the end of him. And good, if that's the case, good riddance to him.
Yeah, well, it's a kabuki dance, right? A lot of form over substance. But you know that it's like Beijing opera. You know, in the end that the workers are going to triumph in a Beijing opera, actually Peking opera play that you watch in China. And now it's just farce. But at one time it was taken very seriously. So this isn't just the U.S. happening in a bubble here. This is the whole world basically getting slammed, right? And inflated, deflated, right? This is everywhere in the world. There's no hiding from this.
There was never been a time in history. You had isolated banana republics suffer inflation. We have never had inflation this high concurrently in Europe and Japan and China and the United States. It's just never happened. You look at the record. I mean, if you want to count for it accurately, United States inflation was at a record high. 20%.
Yep.
Europe was suffering the same thing. Japan has a 50 basis point 10-year note. So one half of 1% 10-year note JGB with inflation above 4.5%. It's ridiculous.
Crazy. You know, severely negative real rates. And we know that is a bad thing for the economy. Normalizing interest rates. I kept talking about that for years, Michael. They never did it. I would argue maybe we're getting closer to a normalized interest rate now, although when you take into account the real rate of inflation, it's not even close.
No. So if you look at the CPI, for the first time since 2010, we have a real Fed funds rate, if you deflate it for consumer price index. But you have to look at the chart on how negative. One of the parts of my model we're talking about is the real Fed funds rate. The real Fed funds rate dropped to a sharply, I mean, never before even imagined negative rate in 2022 and stayed there for a while. You know, it wasn't just here. It was, all over the world we had negative. We had, like I said, $17 trillion in negative interest rates. The global debt now stands at $305 trillion. This is not my imagination. This is Institute of International Finance, okay? $305 trillion. That is $45 trillion higher than it was pre-pandemic, and 25% higher. This is as a percent of GDP now. I'm not talking about nominal debt anymore. $305 trillion is nominal. If you adjust it for GDP, global debt is now 25% higher than it was in 2008. Now, if 5.25% interest rate on the Fed funds rate in 2008 sent the economy crashing, we're back there, Kerry. We're at 5.1% on the effective Fed funds rate, and we got there a lot faster than ever before in history. It took us 1 year to get there from 0 to 5.25. In other words, the amount of debt that we have is unsustainable when interest rates are that high and in above inflation. And inflation, I think, by the way, I think you and I debated about this a little bit. I said that the rate of inflation would be coming down. So disinflation, not that the prices you pay in the grocery store are going to come down. I said the rate of change of the rate of change. So in other words, if they were rising at 9% last year, they're only rising at 5% this year. That's still disastrous for someone who couldn't afford the eggs when they were up from 9%. Now they have to pay another 5% on top of that. I'm using eggs, but you understand what I'm saying. Understand what I'm saying.
Sure.
So we're not getting falling prices, which is deflation. We're getting disinflation. I would like to see deflation because it will be a necessary cathartic occurrence to have the gravitational forces of deflation bring down debt levels, bring down asset prices, to a level that can be supported by the free market. That is what we desperately need to happen. That would be healthy in the long run, Kerry. But it's untenable to politicians.
Yeah.
Because you'll have a period of time, truncated, I would hope and pray, where you would have deflation and a depression. Oh, you know, people can't do this. They can't do that. They can't go out and eat in restaurants. You know, come on, Kerry, listen, this is the situation we have engendered. In other words, there's no easy way out of it. You're going to have bread lines because people don't have the money to pay for bread, or you're going to have bread lines because people's money that they have doesn't
worthless
equate to enough for a loaf of bread. Yes. I don't see how you avoid this because of this massive artificial construct of record debt and record asset prices that must be addressed.
So this is going to be a cataclysmic event for the world. Governments are going to have to stop writing checks with phony money, with inflated currency.
Kerry, you're not talking hyperbole here. I'm not being hyperbolic either. Listen, if you look at the, 50% of the country doesn't have $500. They're living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, I don't know how old this is. There's a lot of statistics out there that say that 70% of the nation is living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, I don't have all the statistics right at the top of my head and on my fingertips, but if you look at data on how that middle class and under are suffering, they call it, what do they call it? The retailers, when stuff walks out the door, they call it
shrinkage.
They call it shrinkage. You know what it is? You know, that's a euphemism for what it really is. It's called theft, right? Why can't we just say what it is? It's not shrinkage. You know, it's not coming out of a cold shower. It's not shrinkage. It's theft. And theft is at record proportions because people cannot afford to consume what they need for the basics. And that's going to get a lot worse if we continue down this road of pursuit of inflation. So if Powell says, as this disinflation morphs into deflation, and as the recession becomes a depression and becomes fully manifest, if he says, I'm going to start printing money again, and I am going to open up the BTFP and take in all assets, even mortgage-backed securities and junk bonds from banks, and even shadow banks can throw their stuff at me, and I'm going to lower interest rates, he could do that. He very well may do that. In fact, I think he will do that as the situation becomes dire. But that does not solve the problem because inflation is not going to stop at 9 or 20. That's the problem, Gary.
Yeah. All right. Well, you summed it up quite well. Got to put a lot of credence in what you say because you've been right, like I say, right on the money for the past year and a half. I'm not sure that's where that's going to leave the world, where it's going to leave the United States, and where it's going to leave you and I. But I guess we'll have to get through it.
Well, listen, here's the problem. If you're someone who owns multiple homes and has a lot of money in the stock market, you know, inflation's like, okay, where does inflation go first? It goes into hard assets, you know, it goes into real estate and stock prices. That's good for me, good for you, Kerry. But what about the people who do the working in this country, the living and working and dying? I think I sound like Jim Stewart a little bit. But to be honest with you, you can't have a viable nation without a vibrant and healthy middle class. And it doesn't work when you have intractable inflation. I mean, you look at history and show me an example of an economy that suffers high inflation that functions very well. It just doesn't happen.
Argentina.
It doesn't happen. So Mr. Powell, if you're listening to Mr. Lutz in this program, and I wish you would, let's get on with reality as fast as possible. Let's shrink the balance sheet from where it was $9 trillion. Now it's 8.4, 8.3. Let's get it back to where it was, you know, even if it was $4.5 trillion, where it was pre-pandemic. But let's get it there as fast as possible. Let's suck up some of this excess money. The gamblers on Wall Street that, you know, that are buying anything that has AI, the algorithms say AI, oh, let's go. Let's run up Microsoft 10 points, you know. Let's get rid of the gamblers on Wall Street and let's provide for a real healthy economy based on markets. And in the long run, you'll be very satisfied and happy you did it.
Hear, hear. I mean, if you look, if they let the markets function for the past 60 years, the economy would be three or four times its current size, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But hey, Michael, just tell us where we find you, how we connect with you on the web.
So if you have $100,000 to invest and you're a U.S. citizen, you could open up an account at Pentoport, and I'll put you in the IDEC portfolio, Inflation, Deflation, and Economic Cycle portfolio. If you don't have that, and if you're, you know, you have $50 a year, I'll give you my weekly podcast, which gives you some of my thoughts, like you hear on this program, some data and thoughts, a general view on what you should do to protect yourself.
All right. Well, that's all we can ask for. I appreciate it, Michael. Always great having you on. If you got a question for Michael, myself, about this or anything else, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Make sure you click the link to Michael's site in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for your free newsletter. Michael, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Great stuff, Kerry.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.